All right, gang, it's officially 2:32. We're going to get started. And, of course, we're all very anxious today because this is the one idea from our evaluations that come in and say, this is the hardest thing we do, which to me is just really unfathomable to think. Because really what was turned in, these quote, homework assignments were just blew me away in many ways. And I say that usually every week, but these are actually frameable. These are Walt Whitman-like, several. I don't know, I'm not a poem expert. I've been writing poems and reading poems since high school. So I know a little bit about them, but what was turned in was just over the top and just shows us the amount of talent and just a little bit of work and a little bit of pondering. You know, they say that the saints are ponderers. And what happens when you do ponder, and you think about even a poem, when you're writing a poem, you come to a stanza, and then you pause, and you take a deep breath, and you look at it, and you meditate a little bit. It's a kind of a magical thing. We've talked about it now several times, but when we look back, even songwriting. So I would give $1 million or just 1,000 points, but since we're really not able to converse, you might not know that the 2016 Nobel Peace Prize winner for literacy was a guy named Robert Zimmerman. You might know him as Bob Dylan. So Bob Dylan, from writing songs, really was awarded because he writes poetry. Springsteen calls himself a poet. A lot of these writers from the 70s, you know, these old songwriters are poets. They see themselves as poets. We say in the church that the liturgy is poetry. Psalms, the Proverbs, we've been over this. But I think really when you read a poem, that's when the poem actually comes alive. And it kind of strikes up the universe, as Sister Mary Faith would say. And that's one thing I did get out of our poetry class. And then even in the poetry club back in college. But it was really when you were reading your poem and how you do it and how you read it. And you're almost like an actor in a play in Shakespeare. So we're going to read some poems today, and we're going to take a bit of a different angle. And hopefully we'll get to our habit number 6. But I'm not too worried if we don't. But I'm going to start off with a quick story and a poem. I was reading Mandela, his book, probably 5-6 years ago. And everybody knows Mandela, his story, 26 years in prison, unbelievable things that he did. You know, he wasn't just in prison, starved, beaten, you know, isolated. And when he got out, what did he do? Anybody remember? He became president of South Africa. I mean, he became president of a country. But not by chance. But when he got out of prison, the crowds chanted, he was a saint. He was a saint. And that really struck me because one of his great quotes was, I am not a saint unless you call a saint a sinner that keeps on trying. And so here was a guy that had this persistence, this humility, this forgiveness. And he goes ahead and leads, not by himself, but a large part led the way to getting rid of apartheid. But he had a very favorite poem that became was just popularized in a matter of days, called Invictus. And maybe you've heard of this poem, Invictus. So we're going to start with that poem. I'm going to read that poem, and then we're going to pass the hat here a little bit. Obviously, we can't read everybody's poems, but just some that we randomly picked, those brave souls that thought they could. So this is Invictus, and this was Mandela's favorite poem. Take a deep breath. Close your eyes if you want to, and enjoy the rhythm of this poem. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced or cried aloud. Only the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloodied, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade. And yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the stroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. So that would be how you would read a poem in a poetry class if you haven't seen one or been one. Kind of give a little drama in there. You kind of, you know, kind of think of yourself as a thespian somewhat. But that is a colorful poem. It actually has a lot of symbolism. Obviously, it was written by a guy. This guy who wrote the poem is actually William Ernest Henley, who has written other poems, and, you know, he's a published poet, you know, professional. But you can tell if you want to look at a poem if it's been published. And that one does have symbolism that is just, you know, we don't want to get into that part of it right now, but we do want to read some of the poems we've created. And so let's do that. We're going to start with our own princess here, who is, who I believe has talent. If she doesn't want to keep her day job, she probably could develop into a Walt Whitman Award winner. You have to submit about 50 poems for that, so you probably have that many. But let's turn the microphone over to you. Oh, right in front of you. There you go. Yeah, these guys are good.
Oh, wow. We look at life through a fog lens, seeing only what we believe to be and then making it so, refusing to clear our blurred vision to unveil what we already know. We measure up to level up. We judge and we choose to bask in ignorance with life as our muse. Compelled to want more, we feel the need to excel, eager to be better than the rest instead of better for ourselves. We dream of fame, that plateau of success, that everyone views as big houses and spending money in excess. We are afraid to love, vulnerability evoking fear. We have lost the ability to feel, personal encounters prove insincere. While looking through that lens, remember this. Obscured vision will show you a life that you want, while reality gives you a life that you'll miss. And it's titled Rose Colored.
It did not. Maybe in another country, I don't know. That did not disappoint. And you can tell that's a typical half-pager, two-stanza. You know, that's a poem that but it has great rhythm. Some of it rhymes. I mean, you know, it's just your emotion.
Yeah.
And you just put it out there, and it comes alive on the page. But when you read that, that's when it really makes sense. And so even if you're not an auditory learner, you can get something out of that. And, of course, you would get the most out of it, but thank you for sharing that. Let's go. Let's go to another similar, and this was a theme. And I'm going to read this one. And just like that, you get the call. The baby is here, and all is well. And just like that, your life changes. You get the call. I'm sorry to tell you, there's been an accident. And just like that, your life changes. Between birth and death, there is life. Life. Live life with hope. Live life with love. Live life with faith. Because if you're lucky, you get the call. Jesus loves you. And just like that, your life changes. Now, that's a poem of conviction. And, you know, there's different levels of poems we talked about, what's meaningful for you. I think probably more than 50% of the poems turned in were about family, and they were about life. Some were short, some were long. Doesn't matter. Some rhymed, some didn't. Doesn't matter. But you spent some time pondering, and you kind of let your soul catch up with the brain, we say. And so that's when the magic hits the paper. Are we going to have any surprises that we have here? That last-minute surprises. All right, then we're going to finish up with one here that I think is probably the name of this poem should be Liberation. But I'm gonna read this one, and you decide what you want to name this one. Hiding inside, safe in my safe place, but all alone. Happy alone, but they look happier outside. Outside seems so far away. Getting there would mean conquering so many fears. Fears of saying it out loud, losing those that I love. Without this wall, I'm so vulnerable. Vulnerable to the outside and exposing my secrets, or my secrets really lie. Lying to myself with false happiness, the person in the mirror could no longer be believed. Believing in myself that I was strong enough to handle the pain. No, pain is the wrong word. Pain I can handle. It was terrifying liberation. Liberated to recognize my true self. Believe in love and throw the open door. Closed doors instead become new passages to life. Life filled with love, pride, acceptance. Acceptance to my true self and my new safe place. safe in my safe place, surrounded by love, going outside. Now, if that doesn't reveal some emotion, and really that's what poems do. So really it's self-awareness. It's really understanding who we are. That one, really honest, you know, you can look at it and say, wow, that's a strong conviction. That's a strong liberation, I think, would be the call there. So I want to thank everybody for the poems they've turned in, and perhaps we will make a poem book. I'm thinking I'm just going to steal them all and submit them to Walt Whitman, and then we'll share the money, okay? So thank you. I know the poems can be a little frightening, but you got through it. It's over. It's all over. So now we're going to look at habit number 6, Stephen Covey, and a fancy word. I'm sure we can all spell it, but that is synergize. It's a one-word habit. This was a fancy word in the 80s when it came out. I remember talking about synergy and what that meant. And really, Stephen Covey's pretty simple. It means just very simple things. And what he's saying is this is the habit of creative cooperation. So if you were going to say another word, teamwork. Really, this really embodies what diversity means. If you're taking notes, value differences and reject or tolerate those differences. I've got to read a Stephen Covey quote because that's typically what we do here. And I kind of like this one that he had in his book. Insincere people have a high need to clone others, to mold them over into their own thinking. They don't realize that the very strength of their relationship is having another point of view. Sameness is uncreative and boring. Sameness doesn't work. Just received the Gallup year-end review summary of what they survey across the workplace. About 10 pages, but every word was just remarkable. And one of the first things they talk about is diversity and how you're not going to make it if you're not diverse, and how if you don't understand and value differences, you're never going to get a real team. Now, we just interviewed 7 or 8 people for Montclair State today, to put a Jersey Mike's, and you talk about diversity. There was every shape, size, color, creed, religion, and all unbelievable team. That is, to me, what a successful team looks like. And while we always love the football field, because what do we say? You know, you have the linemen. You got the big guy. You got the little guy. You got the fast guy. You got the smart guy. Whatever team is, you got to have diversity. And I laugh because when you look at Jersey Mike's culture, back in the early days, that word didn't exist. In 1975, our shop was all white guys that were 5'8". And just kind of funny, you know, that's what we would call them. But, you know, finally a female was hired after about 10 years, Brenda, who was now the Lifetime Achievement Award. But finally, Peter had to learn really what diversity is. That's, I think, the most organic way of figuring it out. But he knew from teams, he knew how to put a team together. And really, that's what we're talking about with synergy. If you can't manage a variety of personalities, a variety of thoughts and beliefs, and value those beliefs. And, you know, our culture, you hear all the time, Peter's voice mattered. At 14, my voice mattered. Because they would listen to him, even though he was young. Even that is, you know, an amazing thought when you think about where he is today. So I think when we look at synergy, what I get out of it is almost combining all the previous habits together. You have to kind of begin with the end in mind. You have to kind of figure out what kind of team you want. You got to have a win-win, and you don't get that unless you're listening. Seek first to understand, then be understood. You look back and you think, wow, this really is a progression. And if you're going to form any team, if you're not valuing your brother or your sister here, then it's going to be tough. And we already know what the answers are. But here's a couple thoughts. When you know you're in synergy, here's just a couple bullet points. You know you're in synergy when you have a change of heart. So you may even be persuaded by somebody else's opinion. Now, when Peter says, listen to your people, listen to what they have to say, it doesn't mean you have to do anything. I think about even when we teach the habits, you might remember the first week we talked about the habits all start in the brain, thinking. As man thinketh, so he is. All those quotes about thinking. Well, we say what happens is your thinking become words. And then what happens to those words? Words matter. Those words become actions. You remember those thoughts. And we all know that old phrase, actions speak louder than words. And then those actions really turn into habits eventually. And then your character is determined by who you are. And I know one of my favorite quotes from St. Francis, and he's got a bunch of them. The deeds you do may be the only sermon someone hears today. And we use the word example all the time in phase two leadership. You know, we lead by example. We have 100 coaches and leaders that talk about you got to do. You know, leaders do. But also, a bullet point here about synergy. You might actually end up with a better idea than when you even started. I was just in a meeting today, Essential Services. Like, we're trying to get an assistant, not an assistant chef, but somebody to work with Chef John. And he had an idea. I had an idea. Well, you first. You know, but that's the thing we're talking about. You know, value the other guy's ideas. See things in a new way. And that's very difficult when we get a little defensive. It's very difficult when we go back to our old belief system. Well, no, it's my way. It's my way. And these are the leaders that are going by the wayside. And I'm going to bring that up because I listened to a pretty cool podcast on UPS the other day going down when I was driving in a tornado down in D.C. So that kind of kept my mind off the insanity. But UPS, unbelievable company right now, and they're leading the way in many categories, mainly because they know how to change. And they have created these diverse teams, very different than what most old-school companies are doing. Old-school companies like Sears. Anybody remember what happened to Sears? Sears is gone. And Fortune magazine had about a 20-page write-up on Sears and what happened to them. And they just refused to change. And so that was, you know, I mean, that's in a nutshell. But what happened was they just couldn't keep up their infrastructure. They weren't transforming their people. They weren't transforming anything. And so today what UPS is saying, we don't have a plan to change from A to B. We're changing all the time. And we can't change unless I have a female viewpoint. I have a big guy, you know, that diversity. We keep going through that. And so that's what we're looking at, especially the young people today. And that's why we're seeing so many young people getting hired by UPS. So just kind of a fascinating thing to look at when we're studying business. So we can go on, but I do have a quote from a coach. The quote, our official quote of the week comes from Coach K from Duke. And, you know, he's a winning coach, probably right now the winningest coach in any sport. But his quote was, anybody can be a great player, but not everybody can be a great teammate. And you think back on any team you were on, who were your great teammates? And I got to tell you, I couldn't read a couple poems that came through because they were talking about that life and death emotion. And we just lost a great teammate from high school. And wasn't the best player, but was known because he was the best teammate. And wouldn't you want that for a legacy? That's really how the team goes forward. That's really how you be. Not everybody's going to be the star, and we know this is kind of summed up in that talk. So, without further ado, one more homework assignment. One more homework, unless somebody fails the homework assignment. Then the whole class will have, no, just kidding. We have, had to bring Mrs. Richter into that, you know, the old, no. Your job this week, if you accept it, is to tap into TED, the TED Talks. And I got to tell you, it's we've talked about them before. TED stands for the Technology Entertainment Design, but anywhere from an 8-minute talk to a 15-minute talk, they're usually, you can, if you just go to the website, you can go see, scroll down, see how many, just pick out a subject that might intrigue you, listen to it, and short report, just a short report of what it means to you. And there's been some pretty good ones lately. I'll probably listen to one or two a week and really come up with, you know, just kind of keeps you going, almost any subject you can think of. So look forward to that. Nothing too outrageous after the poems. I know we're a little shell-shocked, but... And then we'll come around next week to conclude our habits, not quite the course, but our habit number 7. And be looking for a little slide that's going to be coming your way on habit number 7. So, thank you once again. That was 20 minutes of Sub Above Culture. And here we go. See you next week.